The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Monday, May 6th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Alongside me in the studio, as he is every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, it's your favorite uncle, Uncle T-Bone, joining us once again. Man, great to have you back. Happy Monday. How was your weekend?
Yeah, happy Monday. It was a good one, Jacob. Had the boys playing in some tennis tournaments over in Montgomery. Was going back and forth all weekend, so really didn't have time to rest. Was able to catch your Kentucky Derby race.
Yeah, what'd you think about that?
Very exciting.
Yeah,
you know, came down to a photo finish, which was pretty cool.
One of the closest
NASCAR
finishes.
Did the same thing.
Yeah, they went like five wide, didn't they? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And got to catch Auburn baseball last night and watch them rally and take care of business, not to get swept against Ole Miss. I got a lot of thoughts on that. And
a miracle.
You know, man, I was proud of them.
Really?
I was dang proud of them. And I saw some stuff in that game that really has me hopeful for the future of Auburn baseball. Look, it's been a rough season. There's just no other way to put it. But I liked what I saw. I got some thoughts on that. I got some thoughts more on the Auburn football roster, dug into that, basketball as well. There's some news in the transfer portal, hopefully beginning to break for Auburn and breaking for Alabama. Unfortunately for Auburn fans, their roster is getting better. So there's a lot to chew on right now in sports, although the school year's coming to an end, and it seems like it's about to get a little bit slow, and it will. From June, but after the 4th of July, you know, it picks up SEC Media Days, and football is just about 24/7, 365 anyway. So give us a ring at 334-321-1390 here at On the Line, the show that tells it like it is, Jacob.
And holds nothing back, which we fully plan on doing once again today. And you hit all the main points that I want to get to today, topics-wise, and just so much to dive into on those things. We'll get back to the best thing we saw this weekend. We'll talk about that coming up in the next segment. But you brought up Auburn baseball. Let's start there. Let's talk a little Auburn baseball, because the boys did get it done yesterday, which is crazy in a game where you just, the entire time I was watching it, I was not there, but was able to take it in from a graduation party. And congrats to all Auburn graduates out there. That's a big weekend. It was a very busy weekend here in Auburn. And congratulations to everybody who graduated from that prestigious university. I'm very proud to be one, and many of you are as well. Yes, you are. And so congrats to all of those folks. But Auburn baseball did play this weekend and against Ole Miss. And look, I'll say this. In that game yesterday, I just continued to sit there while I was watching it muted on the television, of course, listening to Andy Burcham and Brad Law, just listening to it and thinking, when is it going to happen? Right? Ole Miss jumped on early, and then Auburn came back. And then it's like, okay, Auburn got a lead. When's it going to happen? And then the craziness ensued, right? You had runs going all over the place and late game dramatics. And eventually, Auburn does win yet another Sunday game. All of their SEC wins except one this season, Uncle T-Bone, have been on Sundays. The only other one was the Friday night game against Tennessee. That's it. Auburn has not won any mid games, like the middle game in SEC play, whether that falls on a Friday, Saturday, but they have not won a middle game.
They hadn't won a rubber match yet. Is that right? Is that how you put that?
No, not necessarily. I mean, they haven't, because most of their games have been on Sundays, but most of the time the series has been over. And so they're looking, they have not won that game that could even the series or win a series, but they've only won the first game of the series once against Tennessee in the Friday night game. So what I mean by that is Auburn has always played from behind in the series, is what that means. And you didn't have that yesterday because they had already lost the series, but they were trying to get one of those SEC wins back against an Ole Miss team that is ahead of them in the SEC West. Not by much, but they are. And that was a series that we had talked about, I guess, early last week with Lindsey Crosby, who will be with us again tomorrow, just about the narrative of Auburn trying to get back to Hoover. And this Ole Miss series was important. They didn't get the first two, but they did get a win yesterday. What'd you see from that? You said you had some things you wanted to say.
Well, I don't think, you know, obviously it's more of a psychological side of it, of a program that's, you know, on the brink of being bounced from any possibility of postseason play. Mm-hmm. Let's just be real honest. I mean, the chances and likelihood of Auburn having any kind of postseason play in baseball this year are very slim to none, and slim just left town, right? I mean, you're talking about, what, 5% chance, likelihood, 10% possibly of getting into just the SEC tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to sweep your last two, and about four or five other teams would have to get swept just to even have the conversation.
But you're telling me there's a chance.
That's what they say, Uncle T-Bone.
So, obviously, Auburn comes out, goes down 5-0. Ole Miss is hitting the ball all over the park, hitting bombs. I'm listening to it on the radio at that point, coming back from Montgomery, trying to get home to watch. And up to that point, I think Andy and Brad Law said that Ole Miss had 6 home runs for the weekend, and mm-hmm. Auburn's only power hit was 1 double.
Yeah.
And I'm just starting to shake my head saying, here we go. I've been telling y'all, if you don't hit the ball powerfully in college baseball, you don't have a chance. It's not about the pitching. You can have all the pitching you want. I'm there for the 2 B's. I said it last week. The bombs and the brewski. Okay? That's why I'm there as a fan. Chicks dig the long ball in college baseball. Now, in pro baseball, it's a whole different ballgame. You give me all the pitching I can get, right? But in college baseball, you've got to pound the ball and you got to pound people into submission. And I'm just shaking my head. My oldest son's like, it's okay, Dad. Just calm down. Get us home. Get us off of this I-85 expressway, please.
That's a bad place to be mad.
Golly, back to the loveliest village on the plain. So we get home. We start watching. And then, you know, Auburn starts hitting the ball. And Auburn starts manufacturing some runs. And Auburn's hanging in there. And I'm like, they could have quit.
Mm-hmm.
You've already lost the first two games of the series. Your season is over. And you're down 5-0 after the top of the first. I'm like, they're done. It's over. I've lost. I'm waving the white flag now. Uncle T has had enough. I'm out of here. But you know what? They didn't. And I think it says a lot for the character of this team, for the character of this coaching staff. I think there's more talent over there than's produced this year. And I think that they're going to make some – that type of win – although it's not going to do anything for you postseason-wise this season, it just says to me you're losing baseball games, but you're not losers. You can lose in athletics and still have a championship mentality, which means next play, next pitch, next hit, mm-hmm. next inning, we're going to get back. We're going to get going. And Auburn, you could tell after the game when Auburn won – how meaningful it was to that team to get a W.
Yeah.
I mean, they were celebrating like they just, you know, won the Super Regional and they're heading to Omaha. Those kids were happy. It's like all this stress just got relief. And that's what it takes when you're on a losing streak, man. When you're going through the desert, you just need that one drop of water, that one little bit of hope, man. I've seen it in athletic matches all the time across all sports. Just when you think you're done and you just get that one little ounce of hope, it's something to build on. And I think you're going to see Auburn run with that momentum. I think they're going to play well against Georgia Tech tomorrow. I think they're going to roll up into Missouri, and I want to see them take that series. And that's something the rest of the season heading into the Alabama series can build on this year in that mentality of never say die, never quit. And you can build on that going into next year and say, hey, you saw even our darkest moments, we were playing to win.
Which is what I think a lot of Auburn fans were upset about, because they were not seeing that at times. They weren't seeing that when you got swept by, you know, all these other SEC programs and you were just getting hit around the yard and you couldn't get the pitching under control and you had injuries left and right. And I know that can't be controlled, but all of those things compiled together and it just snowballed out of control for a while. And it would get into that Saturday game after Auburn got beat 8-0 the night before, and it was like, okay, well, now they turn around and get beat 12-2, and they just, you know, it's just homer after mistake, and it was just like, all right, well, another lost series, here we go, right? It's just another example of Auburn baseball being Auburn this year. It's just a bad season. All that fight wasn't really there each and every game. There were moments, there were spurts, sure, but then it would always go away because they'd give it up. That didn't happen yesterday in the game against Ole Miss. They were able to turn it around, you're absolutely right, and get fired up and have that next play, next pitch mentality. And look, they gave up 5 runs to start the ball game. They fought back over 4 innings to get those runs back. Well, they gave up again, and then they fought back, and they were able to walk it off at home in front of yet again another good crowd at Plainsman Park on a hot Sunday afternoon. And it meant a lot to them. There's no doubt about it. And you hope that they can take that into the rest of this way because, yeah, you're at Georgia Tech tomorrow, at Missouri this weekend, before you come home and finish it up for Alabama.
Yeah, this this Ole Miss team's got some players on that team, although their record's not quite what they're used to as well. I mean, that's a program that's had a tremendous amount of success over the last 10 years. Andrew Fisher had a whale of a series against Auburn and just feasted on them late in the ninth inning when he hit that bomb to you know, left center, one little place in Plainsman Park it wouldn't have gone out of, right? Yeah. In most parks, that's a home run, and probably at that point Auburn is done. But you got that just little bit of luck that it didn't leave the park, although it did give them the lead. And then they bring in their reliever, you know, that guy that Ole Miss had in the bottom of the ninth, he can play. And he gets a quick 2 outs, and you're like, well, you know, that's just not meant to be this, not just this series, but this year. It's just one of those years. It's just not meant to be. And they grind and they grind and they grind, and Maynard gets the triple, and I'm like, here we go. You know, and then the base hit, and Butch Thompson puts on a pinch runner. I really, at that point, don't know why Ole Miss went to the bullpen. I felt like they went in there a little too quickly, had some issues with their pitcher and catcher. And Auburn takes the win, and you'll take it, man. A win is a win, and the Tigers needed it desperately in the baseball season.
Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Shane, you're on the line, man. Happy Monday.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing good. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I haven't listened, watched sports since the basketball tanked. I keep checking on things, but I got to disagree a little bit with T-Bone here about the pitching situation. You got to have pitching, man, and it is showing, right? I mean, it's been showing all season. Until we got hurt, our bats were what kept us in games. I mean, we could score, you know, 10, 11, 12 runs. The other team just scored 12, 13, 14 runs. And, you know, if you can't pitch, you can't get the guy out, then you know, we just got outscored every single game. And a lot of those games were high scores, you know, 10 to 12, 10 to 11, 11 to 12. I mean, so you gotta have pitching. But, I mean, it's easy to say you don't need pitching when teams, you know, have some solidity, you know.
I'm not saying you need to abandon the pitching rotation and just don't worry about it. If I had my druthers in college baseball, I would rather have a better hitting team. If I had to pick one, you want better hitting or better pitching? I'd take better hitting.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but we've got to have some pitching.
Well, yeah, you got to have somebody out there.
And Auburn's problem was when the pitching was good, the offense was bad. And when the offense was good, the pitching was bad. Auburn just, and the injuries played a whole part of that, obviously, and guys not meeting expectations. Yeah, and that's the big problem, is nothing could ever come together for this Auburn team.
And to Jacob's point, I'm looking over the SEC statistics by team for both hitting and pitching. And in both hitting and pitching, Auburn is 12 of 14 in the league. So neither one of them have been great.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it feels like the pitching has never been there this year. I don't remember a series where we're like, oh, all right, you did a good job.
Yeah.
You know, but the injuries just seem to what got us on the offensive side. But yeah, this season's a scratch. I haven't really paid attention since you know, for a little while. When we got swept back-to-back series, I was like, this is over. This series, this season. So, can y'all talk about any if you got any football recruiting news? I have to say, I haven't paid attention to sports in a little bit. I would love to hear a little bit of something.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. We'll definitely get to it
when y'all come back. Yeah, where are you going?
Yep, appreciate the call, Shane. 334-321-1390. Yep, we'll get to some football things today. We got some basketball things we need to get to today. In terms of Auburn, they're after swinging and missing twice, Uncle T-Bone. They've got two more guys that they're going after, and believe it or not, they could be better than the two they were going after before, and then the team on the other side of the state just continues to dominate. So that's coming up later today, some football things also, and when we come back, we'll bring back the segment that we've been doing the last couple of weeks as we get through the summer, best and worst that we saw in sports over the weekend. We'll have that for you when we come back here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, best and worst from over the weekend. Something we like to do on Mondays around here as we're getting into the summertime. And, you know, during the fall and especially basketball and things like that, we're always reacting to all the games and stuff for Auburn from over the weekend. But with so many other things going on right now, Uncle T-Bone, want to open this up to you, my friend, or I can start, doesn't matter. Best and worst things that you saw in sports over the weekend. It can be from NASCAR, it can be from the Derby, it can be college baseball, it could be playoffs for the NBA or the NHL, it can be, I don't care if you got some underwater basket weaving highlight you want to talk about. Anything that's on your mind, best and worst from over the weekend.
I mean, I think the best definitely was the Kentucky Derby. That was pretty impressive, that win there.
That was wild.
Golly, the winner comes off at 18-1. I mean, those are some people locally claim it was 20-1, although no one's gambling in the state of Alabama. Mystic Dan wins the 2024 Kentucky Derby by a nose.
The 150th running of
literally
the Kentucky Derby.
By a nose. And, the worst, I mean, I would say probably Fernando Tatis, the guy from San Diego. I cannot ever pronounce his name.
The baseball player?
Yeah, getting thrown
Fernando
at.
Tatis Jr.?
Yeah, getting thrown at again at his head.
Yeah.
I mean, these people do not like this kid.
No, they don't.
And it's gone a little too far, I think. And I saw their manager, Mike Schmidt, speaking about it. And enough's enough. I mean, dude, you want to throw at somebody in baseball, that's fine. You don't throw at somebody's head.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not right.
Yeah, one of those.
It's not right. It's dangerous. These people are bringing it 100, 98, 99, whatever, plus all the time. You want to pop somebody, pop them in the square of the back, and that's how the game's played, and then they'll come back and pop your guy in the square of the back. If you start throwing it at somebody's head, big-time fights are going to break out.
Yeah, you better believe it.
You need to keep an eye on that in San Diego. I think that their team's had about enough of that, and Schmidt coming out and speaking about it in Major League Baseball is definitely a sign to his team that you better be ready to rumble because we're going to have our guys back.
Yeah, and that's something that I think they've just had to adopt, and they're like, all right, look, we got to go to fight for our guy. And it's crazy that it's getting to that, but that's just kind of where it is with him. And look, he's a cocky player. He's good, but he's going to let you know about it. And that name carries a lot of weight around. And yeah, now I don't condone throwing at people's heads, but that's just one of those old school baseball things, man, where they're going to send a message one way or the other. And that seems to be happening right now.
They're tired of the bat flips and the acting out. And I mean, the Padres have made a tremendous investment in this guy. I think he signed a 14-year contract.
Yeah, he's there for life.
He is their guy in the face of the franchise. I'm not a big bat flip guy. I don't like people grandstanding when they hit bombs and showing up pitchers. I mean, I know I played a lot of baseball growing up. I know a lot of the unwritten rules, but one of them to me is, man, you just can't be throwing in people's heads. That's ridiculous.
I'm with you on that.
And occasionally one flips. We all get it. We all know it. I mean, these pitchers, professionals, they can place it pretty much where they want to at most times or close enough to it in proximity. But you do see the occasional one. But, you know, this continues to happen over and over and over again. Those aren't by accident.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're up there around the grill and – That is just no way to play the game, in my opinion.
Best thing I saw in sports, I have a couple of things I want to say here, and then I do have a worst thing I saw. Best thing I saw over the weekend was in playoff action in hockey. Yes, I am going to talk NHL for a second. You had two Game 7s this weekend. You had a Game 7 on Saturday and a Game 7 yesterday. And for anybody that watches sports professionally, Game 7s are the best. They say it's the two best word in sports, Game 7, because it's everything is up for grabs. Everything is at stake. The entire season comes down to one singular game. You had my Boston Bruins get it done on Saturday night in the most stressful, ugly way possible against the Maple Leafs, but they did win 2-1 in overtime, so we're moving on to play the Panthers, which I don't feel good about, but that's okay. We moved on. And then you had last night out in Dallas, Texas, you had the Stars, yes, a team from Texas with a good hockey team, that's wild, taking down the reigning champs, the Vegas Golden Knights. So two Game 7s that were one-goal games, man, it's awesome. And whether you're a hockey person or not, that's up to you, but Game 7s in any professional sport playoff-wise are awesome.
Yeah, we watched a little bit of that Dallas game, and my youngest son and I were flipping through the channels, and he's like, "Who's that, Dad?" And I was like, "Oh, that's the Stars, man. Their jerseys are killer. Those
green they are
jerseys.
Sweet.
So
yeah.
We've kind of adopted them as our team. I know it's not really a reason to cheer for a team because of their jerseys, but we don't know anything about hockey. And we enjoyed watching them play that game.
It's fun to watch,
man. So we're
going to
keep an eye on them moving forward. It is. It's a little hard for me, Jacob, though, to keep up with that puck on TV.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure about all the icing rules. But other than that, it is exciting, and it's a physical game where these people get after it.
Yes, and they ramp it up in the playoffs. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, that was one of the best things I saw, where two Game 7s were fantastic over the weekend in hockey. The other thing, and we cannot repeat what was said during all of this, but did you see what happened last night where they held a massive roast for Tom Brady? Did you see this?
I have picked up on a little bit of this. Have not been able to go in on the details, so I'm going to have to take your word for it. But I heard it was pretty intense, just to say a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was intense, to say the least. Now, if you have not, you also had a Game 7 in the NBA yesterday, too. Forgot about that. The Cavs coming back from down the more than 18 points to beat the Magic at home in Game 7, so there's that. I don't know if you can go back and rewatch it. I think Netflix put it on, and it was a comedic roast of Tom Brady, where they just, comedians stood up there for hours and just said every possible thing they could about Tom Brady, and it was hilarious. Like, again, I can't repeat things that were said, but if you're into that sort of thing and you want a good laugh about it and you're not a Tom Brady fan, then just go watch it. It was phenomenal. So those are the two best things I saw over the weekend. The worst thing I saw is good for some, but not for us, and this will carry into the next segment after the bottom of the hour break. Alabama continues, Uncle T-Bone. They continue to load up on that roster. And I don't feel good about it. I'm not happy about it. They continue to get the biggest of the big, the best of the best. And that roster has gotten scary good with the addition they made this weekend.
I don't think I'm quite prepared to call Aiden Holloway the best of the best.
Oh, I ain't talking about Aiden Holloway.
I know, but he is part of this new revamped roster over there in Tuscaloosa.
He is, yeah.
You're talking about Big Cliff.
Big Cliff, yes. Oh, goodness, I've heard it pronounced numerous
Omaruya.
Times. Yeah, sure. Omarui, I think is how you say it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll just call him Big Cliff.
Big Cliff. I like it. The Rutgers transfer, who was one of the most sought-after big men in the transfer portal. He picked Alabama this weekend over Kansas State, Georgetown, and North Carolina. Those are pretty good programs. I'd say North Carolina's up there with all of the biggest teams in college basketball. And so I say it's the worst thing I saw because, yet again, Alabama go and get somebody, and Auburn is still looking for those guys in the transfer portal, and they swung and missed twice last week.
Yeah, that's what I said. You got to go ahead and get this roster shored up. You just don't want to leave any kind of gray area for the haters out there to pick you apart. Have you seen this ridiculous tweet, though, what some Alabama people are claiming about Big Cliff coming choosing Alabama over North Carolina and other schools?
What?
That there was an offer out there, Jacob, for over $2 million for him to go to a particular school, and he said, no, I want to go play for NATO.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is some type of spin that they've got going out in the media that kids are just out there getting $2 million to play basketball for a season, kids from Rutgers, and that they're just turning down that money because Nate Oates is so great. That's where they want to go. Okay, we believe you, Alabama fan.
Home country of Nigeria. I'm sure he grew up wanting to play in Tuscaloosa his entire life. That makes sense to me. We'll talk about that, plus Auburn and the transfer portal as well. Got some thoughts to talk when it comes to basketball and the transfer portal. That's coming up next on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds. And at the back, he's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins with you on this Monday afternoon. And talking news in the basketball transfer portal, there's big news to talk about in terms of Alabama basketball. And we're hoping, Uncle T-Bone, that there is some big news coming for Auburn after what was, I think you could say, a disappointing and confusing week last week from the portal, and Auburn is trying to make up for that, and we're going to get to that here in just a few minutes. But to continue this conversation a little bit about the newest member of the Alabama Crimson Tide, the Rutgers big man, who is now going to be playing for Nate Oates in Alabama, Cliff Omorui, the Nigerian native who is transferring from Rutgers, who visited Georgetown, Kansas State, North Carolina, and Alabama. He commits to the Crimson Tide. He is playing for Nate Oates.
Yeah, I found this one. I alluded to it earlier about this whole ridiculous story that he allegedly turned down too large at some other school to go to Alabama just because he wants to play for Nate Oates so much.
$2 million is what he turned down, allegedly.
Yeah, this is from old Joe Tipton at Tipton Edits. He's some basketball guru over at On3. Kind of looks like he's, I mean, some zongrel that just really just, I mean, I don't really know who this guy is. You say he's a great, he has a lot to do with
he does
with basketball.
Yeah.
I don't know much about him, but Tipton Edits on three. All right, you can find him on Twitter. I was told this morning that Cliff received a $2 million NIL offer from a school while going through the portal process, and it was not from Alabama. I mean,
it ain't from Georgetown or Kansas State. I'll go ahead and tell you that right now.
So you're telling me that I'm supposed to believe that some kid who's played at Rutgers for the last year, 3 years, who's from Nigeria, okay? And I'm getting texts now from some of my Alabama listeners and friends saying, don't be a hater, Uncle T. He's now your Nigerian nightmare, okay?
Jeez.
Christian Okoye is the Nigerian nightmare, the former Kansas City Chief running back, not Cliff Omorui.
Omorui.
Whatever his name is. I don't Oma believe that he turned down $2 million just to go play it for Nate Oates because, I mean, I'm sure that's really what, you know, his system is so so geared towards big men just really excelling in it, right? I mean, give me a break. If you believe that, I've got oceanfront property right now, not in Notasoga, but in Nigeria, where Big Cliff is from, that you can buy really cheap.
I'm with you. I mean, I cannot wrap my head around.
That's ridiculous.
If you're offered $2 million to play anywhere, why you would turn that down?
Do you think that there's a basketball player right now in college basketball who will make $2 million next year in NIL money?
Probably.
I mean, really, how many do you believe?
Not many.
Less than
a dozen. Less than 10.
Oh, I think it's less than a handful.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I think
$2 million is a lot. Like that, you're starting to talk serious money in basketball. That's a lot.
I would have a hard time believing that there's any college basketball player who's going to make $2 million next year. But, you know, in today's world, I wouldn't be shocked by it either, especially with John Calipari going over to Arkansas and they're about to start throwing around money.
And they said
like wildfire.
What was the number they said he had? Like $5 million a year or something like that he was going to be able to use for NIL? So, I mean, you know, you go get a starting guy. Yeah, I mean, you could pay him, I guess. I'm curious on what like Bronny James was making and stuff like that, you know, NIL money. But, God, $2 million for a transfer player, for a transfer portal center who's 6'11" from Rutgers. Now, he was all Big Ten, and he was all defensive team in the conference, averaging 10 points a game, 8 rebounds, and ranked third nationally with almost 3 blocks a game. The guy can play. There's no doubt about it.
He can play now. No question
about it. But being offered $2 million, allegedly, according to Joe Tipton, $2 million to play. And as I said, the four schools that were interested here are Alabama, North Carolina, Kansas State, and Georgetown. And he said it's not from Alabama. There is no way, no way that Georgetown or Kansas State have $2 million in NIL money sitting around. And there's no way in the world they're going to throw it at a center in basketball. Georgetown would, because that's all they do. But no, those schools don't have $2 million of NIL to throw into basketball. It had to be North Carolina.
I don't think Georgetown probably has much of an NIL program whatsoever.
I mean, their team is historic, but they've been bad for so long.
Oh, I just don't think they've got the alumni in the fan base willing, in the numbers, just willing that it takes volume-wise to generate that kind of revenue.
And Kansas State, I mean, they're football first. They have a good – their basketball program's been legit the last 7 or 8 years. But
now.
He's good, and they have bought into him for sure. But they're still football first.
They're not throwing that kind of money around.
Not at one player. No shots.
Maybe total NIL for both basketball and football at Kansas State. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of money for a college athlete. $2 million is a pile of money.
And think about where we are. Think about, again, I try to do this as much as I can. Let's stop in our tracks for just a second here. We're talking about a young man that's playing college basketball that transferred and was allegedly offered $2 million. A college basketball player, $2 million. Could you imagine? 10, 15 years ago. It may have been happening then. It probably was.
I don't believe it. I think that's just some gobbledygook that somebody at Alabama threw at Joe
Tipton.
That's
what I'm saying.
That's
a lot of money,
It's not good enough just to go out and get this great player and add to him. We got to tell everybody how great Nate Oates is in doing so. And the spin here. There's never been a school athletically in college sports, maybe going back to like the Four Horsemen in Notre Dame and back in the good old days when people really read the newspapers, that have ever used the media to their advantage like they do in Tuscaloosa. Well, my hat's off to them for doing it.
Yeah.
But the spin here is outrageous. You're telling me that this kid turned down $2 million to play at North Carolina? And there's multiple articles about it right here at Yahoo Sports. Report suggests UNC basketball portal target turned down a big NIL deal, quote, somewhere over the rainbow. Come on, guys. Can we use our brain? This is my advice to everybody moving forward. Don't buy into anything anybody in the media says, especially on a national level in sports. Just don't do it. I was told all last week by every media person in Auburn that the kid from High Point was going to be an Auburn Tiger. I mean, he's from Montgomery. His family's right down the road, Uncle T. And then he ends up at Oklahoma. So until you see it with your own eyes, can we please move forward without this gaslighting? I don't believe you, whoever Joe Tipton is. Fact.
334-321-1390. Let's get back to the phone line. Spectre, how are you, man? Happy Monday. Great to hear from you.
Hey, guys. Well, you need to get used to it. I've told you this before. First, it was the portal. Well, how do we get all these good players to come through the portal to come to our team? Well, they instituted NIL. Now what you're seeing is the House of Oates is competing with the House of Pearl. And whoever gets the highest bid goes to the player.
And the House of Oates is winning.
Yes. You know, it kind of reminds me back in the days. I've seen it through history books and through film and whatever. Back when the gladiators were in the arena,
mm-hmm.
where you had the House of Oates and the House of Pearls there. They were competing for the best gladiators from around the world. And whoever got the highest bid, that's where the gladiator went. So that's what we're seeing today, fellas.
You know, I think Alabama fan Spectre should just really take their hats off and thank Bruce Pearl for not only him rebuilding Auburn's basketball program, but for theirs also. Because there's no way on earth they go out and try and get somebody like Nate Oates and put all this money behind getting all these players if Auburn doesn't go to the Final Four a few years ago.
No, exactly right. Exactly right. Their house is not going to be bigger than ours. And we're going to have the best gladiators that money can buy.
Yeah, and that's just the mentality. And I mean, you can't blame them, right? You can't blame them for having that mentality, but it's the way of the road, as they say, and that's exactly what's happening right now, Spector. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. You know, I saw that baseball game yesterday, and, you know, I heard your commentary on that. And it was Auburn went down 5-0 right off the bat. I mean, they didn't get the bat before they was 5-0.
Two bombs.
And all of a sudden, you know, heads were dropping, stuff like that. But we fought back one run, and then another run, and then another run.
Mm-hmm.
And before you knew it, it was 5-5. And this kid comes in out, I can't remember his name, comes in out of the bullpen for Auburn and just shuts down Mississippi. And, you know, from that point on, I think the gas just ran out when Mississippi went up 9-8.
Yeah.
And they were just like, oh, well, same old story. But no siree, Bob. No, those kids did not give up. Did not give up.
Which was refreshing to see, wasn't it, Spector?
It was. It was a long day. I mean, it went into the night. It started off in the day, went into the night, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's all right. Hey, you'll take a win any way you can get it.
Yeah, but it was a good game. But anyway, fellas, that's all I got for today.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Spector. Great to hear from you, man. 334-321-1390. And to go back to his point, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's always been the mentality between Auburn and Alabama is – your house will not be bigger than ours. We will do, even if our house is a wreck, if you start working on yours, we'll start working on ours. And well, that's how it's always been.
I can promise you, following this rivalry in Auburn Athletics since 1982, I've learned one thing, and Alabama is not going to let Auburn leave them behind in anything. I mean, that's just all there is to it. And basketball was kind of a afterthought in Tuscaloosa, with all the success that Nick Saban had had in football. And along comes Bruce Pearl, who turns Auburn into a Final Four team, a team that really got screwed out of its chance to win a national championship.
Should have won it, yeah.
And all the excitement that was around that and all the you know, money and attention and all the FaceTime of Bruce Pearl, they weren't going to let Auburn just walk away with that. No, sir, not in anything. So the moment that Auburn gets really good in anything, if Alabama's struggling a little bit, they're going to do everything they can to get back on top. That's just how it is.
They've done it, man. You look at that roster for Alabama. I want to talk about that some more and get to Auburn stuff as well. We got a phone call that we're going to get to as well. We'll go ahead and take an early break here on the in our first hour. We'll come back, find our final segment of the first hour, get into hour number two. Again, talking some basketball transfer portal, because comparing these two rosters right now, Auburn's still looking to make up some time and I guess make up some ground is what I should say in terms of the transfer portal. They've got two guys that are going to be visiting that they're trying to do that with. All that and more, plus Pat, you'll be first up when we come back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Let's get to the phone lines once again, 334-321-1390. Pat, you're on the line. We appreciate you holding on through the break, man. What's up?
Hey, no problem. Enjoy the show, guys. Look, I just got a quick comment. I'm going to hang up.
Okay.
The Alabama player that y'all was talking about, he did get a $2 million offer, but it was in Nigerian currency, which translates to 10 sheep and a deer pelt. Thanks, guys.
Now let's look up the current exchange rate for what is the Nigerian monetary
currency? I have no idea. There you go. I know a search engine that you could probably find that on.
Apparently, it's not doing too well. Nigeria's currency has fallen to a record low as inflation surges. Quote an AP article from February 16th. How did things get so bad? This isn't a political show, so we could go into how did things get so bad, but
because we know so much about
luckily,
Nigerian politics.
Luckily for Big Cliff from Rutgers, I mean, he's got $2 million in his back pocket, you know, and he could send that home. It's probably worth about $3 trillion of Nigerian currency. He's like, nah, I'd rather go to Tuscaloosa instead. I'm good.
Don't say you didn't learn something on our show today. That's all I can tell you. How about that?
I'm still trying to look for what the Nigerian currency is called. I don't even know if it's called anything anymore other than worthless.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you can get $1,500 American dollars to $1 of Nigerian currency.
How much?
I think it's further plummeted to 1,524 to 1 on Friday. That's back
$1,524?
Yes.
Of American dollars are
worth... excuse me. You get 1,524 Nigerian dollars to 1 American dollar.
Holy smokes.
Anybody want to buy some oceanfront property in Nigeria right now?
Yeah, I'll take a cheeseburger for... 5,000 Nigerian dollars. Good Lord. 334-321-1390. John in Auburn, you're on the line, man. What's up?
I tell you what, I didn't have Nigerian currency exchange on my bingo card.
That wasn't on the show rundown. No, I didn't have that one on there either.
I missed that one. You know, I'll get to my point here. So I was at Talladega a couple weeks ago, and in the second row, there was a dog with protective earmuffs on, in a Patrick Mahomes jersey, second row from the track, right by the start-finish line. And I was like, you know, didn't have that one on my card either.
That's America right there, John.
Yeah, that's just America. Red-blooded, good old-fashioned America right there. America,
that's
love
America.
It.
That's America.
Dogs at NASCAR races, I believe that.
In a Patrick Mahomes jersey.
Yeah, yeah. All good with me, man. I got no problem with it.
Yeah. Why not?
What kind of dog was it?
It's like a collie or something like that.
Sounds about right. Yeah,
yeah, it's all good.
Decent size individual. But anyway, hey, want to talk about something else about America is college football.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, I am so glad that the SEC is going to this new scheduling format. And I'll be honest, I know Auburn has road games against Arkansas and Kentucky this year.
Not Arkansas, Missouri and Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Missouri and Kentucky.
Yeah.
I know what I meant to say.
That's right.
Against Missouri and Kentucky, road games there. And let me tell you, I think 8 games in a conference is a small sample size for what a program looks like. But over the next 5-10 years, I feel like those teams have to come back to the pack. I mean, good night. These are two teams that have been propped up year after year by playing Vandy every year, and South Carolina and a down Florida team and a down Tennessee team. I'm ready for these teams to play somebody.
Yeah,
and I'm just the Eastern Division. I am selling the stock I have in Missouri and Kentucky as college football programs.
Well, you're right. The Eastern Division has been down for quite some time. Georgia's feasted on it. Look, they've been very good, but they've had a pretty good advantage over there. It hadn't helped that Auburn's been down as well for the rest of the conference, being one of Georgia's permanent rivals. I'm not selling Missouri next year, though, and I'm going to tell you why. Well, a couple reasons. They do have a lot of returning talent. That was a good football team at the end of last year, about as hot as anybody at the end of last year. Listen to this schedule, John. In 2024, it's pathetic. Host Murray State, host Buffalo, host Boston College, host Vanderbilt. That's 4-0 at Texas A&M. Then they go to UMass on October 12th. Then they host Auburn and finally get to a little bit of the meat of the schedule, going to Alabama and then hosting Oklahoma, which is a team that they've got a lot of history with. They play South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. That's got to be one of the easiest schedules, not just in the SEC, but in college football.
I agree, but I still think I would say probably 8-4.
Oh,
at the minimum.
I think 8 would be a very disappointing season.
Coming off of what they did last year.
With that schedule coming out.
Agreed.
Now, I do think that Auburn can play with them. I'm not.
100%.
I got to see what Auburn's going to look like a little bit more before I buy into all these great transfers we've got, which are better than last year's. But I think Auburn can play with them. But I only see one real game where I know they won't be favored next year, and who knows what Alabama's going to look like under Kalen DeBoer in October. I tell you what, man, Missouri will be favored in every game right now, I bet, other than Alabama.
one thing I do like about where Auburn fits in on that schedule is that's after, I know it's on, no, Auburn's at Georgia, but that's coming off a bye week that Auburn has after Georgia. So you have 2 weeks for that game.
Yep.
But question I had for y'all is, that's from the east side. On the west, what programs, like, I think of like A&M and Ole Miss and Auburn and that group of maybe three, that I think will do a lot better under a balanced schedule. And then I think we're just totally up the creek under the old schedule. Are there any teams that stick out in your mind, like from a positive, not in 24, but just over the next 5 or so years?
Yeah, I like that. And we're going to get to that, John. We're up against a break. Appreciate you calling in. Would love to get to that. That's a good conversation
piece. Yeah, we can do that to start in the next hour, but I'm going to say it before we get to break. I think the team that you need to keep an eye out on from the old Western Division over the next 5 years is LSU.
You better believe it. I just signed it in the air. LSU. And that's going to be my quick answer, John, because you talk about an LSU team that's already been winning national titles from the SEC West. Give them a couple of more easy games and easy wins and get into the playoffs every single year. Under Brian Kelly, that's a team you don't want to mess with. That's my answer. We'll talk some more about that. Auburn basketball in the transfer portal, plus Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. That's all coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two of the Monday edition of On the Line. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of the first hour of the show, we talked some Auburn baseball, had some good phone calls, started talking a little basketball transfer portal news, about to talk some Auburn basketball here in just a minute. But if you missed any of that from hour number one, you can go and listen to the podcast later on today. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Here in hour number two, we're going to talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network coming up in about 30 minutes, recapping what was a busy weekend in Auburn athletics, what is another busy week here on the Plains. You've got the SEC softball tournament getting going tomorrow. That's all being held over at James B. Moore Field. So I hope you're not looking for a hotel room around town, because good luck, you won't find one. So we'll talk to him about that, baseball, all the other wonderful sports going on around Auburn athletics. That'll be at the bottom of the hour coming up at 3:30, but a couple of things we're going to talk about. I want to get to John's topic in the next segment, talking about the new format of SEC football and which teams are going to benefit from maybe some easier schedules. We gave our answers quickly there at the end of the first hour, Uncle T-Bone, but we'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. We had talked about Alabama's transfer portal success in college basketball, where they pick up another big-time player. The starting center for them is the Rutgers transfer, Omarui, who is going to be starting for them at that five position, Big Ten defensive team, and just one of the best defenders in all of college basketball. Apparently turned down $2 million to go play for Nate Oates in Alabama.
Allegedly.
Allegedly is what they say. But in terms of Auburn basketball, we know last week the two words I used were disappointing and confusing, because you had two guys, one that seemed to be an inevitable lock, according to those in the know, right? The ones that have all their people. And he was a lock to be an Auburn Tiger. He was coming to the Plains. And then, he just flipped around and went somewhere else and ended up playing and going to Oklahoma. RJ Godfrey, on the other hand, the Clemson transfer, that one was a little bit more clear, right? We talked about how Georgia really came into play there, and they offered him the two things that mean the most to players nowadays: playing time and money. And they had
like
more
guaranteed
of that.
Starting playing
exactly.
time.
Exactly. They had a starting role for him, and they were going to pay more money because Georgia needs a guy like that more than Auburn does. And so that's basically what happened. But Auburn's trying to turn that around. They're trying to fix that with two new guys that are going to be on top of the board for this Auburn team and trying to fill out the roster. I mean, they're trying to really get everything squared away. And the first player is by the name, I love this, Jordan Ivy Curry, the UTSA transfer guard who averaged over 17 points a game for UTSA. He could come in and really fill out that guard room, Uncle Tebow.
Yeah, he's a good-looking player right there from UTSA. 6'3", junior, will consider Auburn, Central Florida, and Wake Forest. Boy, you got to believe that out of those three schools that Auburn would be the best choice with what has happened over the last 5 to 7 years. I mean, Central Florida's got a decent program. Wake Forest is historically a pretty good program in the ACC, to say the least. But Auburn's just been head and shoulders better than those programs, especially with Bruce Pearl. The Lamarck, Texas native averaged 17 points, 5.2 rebounds, and 3 assists. Tigers looking for a guard. He would be a good one to get. The other news is the big man from Samford looking to come and take a visit to Auburn. That's right. Samford out of Birmingham got a lot of press this year. Auburn's already gotten a Southern Conference, all Southern Conference player, and J.P. Pegues from the transfer portal from Furman. But this guy's name, and am I pronouncing this right? Is this really his name, Acorn Acorn?
I don't think there's an N at the end of it. I think
I'm sorry,
Acorn,
I don't have my
Acorn.
Reading glasses on.
It's Acor Acor, yes. His first name is the same as his last name.
So basically Acor squared, the 6'8 junior, and he's a big man, 16.1 points and 6 rebounds a game for Samford this season. That was a Samford team that did a lot of good things. Auburn's got 2 spots on their roster left to fill, and I believe that both of these would be really good gets. I'm not quite sure when Mr. Acor Squared is going to come down and take a visit to Auburn. I'm sure it will be pretty soon. I'm trying to figure out a few other teams that he's looking at. But, man, just being right down the road, you'd think that Auburn have a pretty good advantage of getting him.
Apparently, I was Googling it because I'm interested. People have, and this is by no means anything, I guess, reliable because it's a Reddit thread. There are people with the name.
What did we say earlier?
Don't believe it.
Don't believe it until you see it with your own eyes.
Simon. Somebody claims they've met a Holden Holden.
Simon and Simon was like an old TV show from the 80s.
I mean, there's some interesting ones in there. Somebody said they knew a Jake Jacob. Oh, that'd be terrible. Oh, that'd be horrible.
How would you like it if your name was Goins Goins?
I don't think it flows. Goins Goins.
There's a Ben, you know, there's a Ben Bennett out there that used to play at Georgia.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
getting a little close.
Yeah, these people keep talking about they met a David McDavid, but I kind of like that one.
Huh.
I don't know. I think it could work with certain names. Is there a name that would actually work with a double name? A first? Apparently, it's called a reduplicated name, according to...
Reduplicated name.
That's what it says. I don't know. I didn't come up with it.
I went to high school with a guy named Randy Robinson. It's a pretty cool name.
Sure, yeah. That's
does that count?
No, I don't think so. Well, back to a guy that does have a reduplicated name in Acor, a guy that Auburn could desperately use in terms of filling out its depth piece in the roster. That's your backup four. That's who that guy is. He would step in and be the backup to Chaney Johnson at the four, which would mean you'd play Jani Broome at the five with Dylan Cardwell at the five. And I still want to throw this out there in case BP's out there somewhere listening to ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, to where you could play Jani and Dylan at the same time. I don't want that thought to go away. Now, doesn't mean it's going to happen, but I still think it could.
I think it will happen a little bit more this season from everything I'm reading. I think they're gonna show some different stuff than they showed last year. Yeah, that game against Yale especially kind of proved you just can't rely on everything, rely on what you do all the time. You've got to go into your bag of tricks, especially when someone gets tossed from the game like Chad Baker-Mazar did. And that would have been a good time to unleash just a massive, massive size roster or five and just pound Yale into oblivion inside. And I think you're going to see more of that. They're just too physical and too athletic not to have them on the court at the same time, especially if Alabama's going to go with a big man and try and have some type of threat in those type games with Big Cliff from Rutgers.
Yeah, and I mean, Auburn's going to have to find something. I mean, I like Janai, but I think he's the best at the four. Like, I think he is the best version of himself when he's playing four, and I think Auburn is the best version of themselves when he's playing the four, where you have Dylan as a true center, where he is your tall guy for size, for defense, for rebounding, and can take a couple of more fouls, because Janai Broom and foul trouble is bad news for Auburn. That is bad news bears when Janai Broom is sitting on the bench watching the game. And that, I'm not saying that's bad against Dylan, because he needs to be in the game too, but if you're trying to throw a couple more fouls on somebody, wouldn't you rather it be on Dylan Cardwell than you would Janai Broom in terms of your offensive game plan?
Yes.
That's why you need size, and that's why I think you could play them both at the same time with Acor back behind him, with Chaney Johnson coming off a bench at some point too, or just different rotational minutes. I don't know, but you go and get this kid, you've got some serious size and some serious talent. Plus, if you go and land the Jordan Ivy Curry from UTSA, another guard that floats into the rotation, Auburn's roster is starting to look really good.
Now, am I reading this right, that both of these players are juniors and will have 2 years of eligibility?
Yes, they will. You know, you'll have your senior year, and then, yeah, you'll have that extra flex year. So,
what about Pegues? Was he a senior or was he a junior?
Pegues is, I believe he's got the 1 year. I'd have to double check.
He's got the 1 year left. Well, you know, I'm kind of seeing a trend with these two that you're going to get.
He may have more.
You're going to have to get these two guys in if you can get them, and they're going to have a couple of years of eligibility left. And, you know, you can take a quick look at Auburn's roster on the basketball side of things, and you're going to see some holes after next year. Had there not been, you know, some transfers out, you wouldn't have seen them this year, but especially with Broom coming back and Cardwell coming back. They're gone. I mean, they cannot play anymore. They will not be here. They seem like they've been here for years. I'm glad they're coming back. But that is a massive, massive void in your roster. So you better have a couple. You get these transfers in, unless you're just going all in, which, I mean, they're trying to do every year to get to the Final Four and have a shot at winning the national title.
Right. And Pegues has got 1 year remaining, by the way.
Yeah, Pegues has 1 year. These two guys would have 2 years. I believe Chaney Johnson will be gone after this year. Is that correct?
Yes.
Chad Baker-Mazar, will he be gone after this year? He'll be gone either way. He's gonna blow up next year.
Well, I mean, think about this roster, man. This roster is going to turn over significantly.
Big time.
Next year.
Big
after
time.
This year, it's going to turn over drastically. And Bruce Pearl and Auburn have to go find replacements for these guys. And whether that's high school, transfer portal, combination of both, you have got to go find a new roster for 2025 and beyond. And look, I don't know whose responsibility that's going to be, and I don't know who's going to be kind of leading that charge, but you've got to plan for the future too. You need to win this year for Auburn and make a serious push at a national title, but you have to prepare for the future, because teams like Alabama are, and they're planning on Nate Oates being there for the next 10, 15 years and winning them national championships. The question is Auburn doing the same?
The good thing about basketball, Jacob, is that unlike football, when you have to have wholesale roster changes like Auburn did last year, especially in Hugh Freeze's first year, just to stabilize the number count on your roster, you can have wholesale roster changes in basketball and it work. You can do that every year. So if you're good enough and strong enough in the portal in basketball and you're identifying players that you want for your system or for your culture, and you're getting the same like-minded players, four or five of them, out of the portal every single year, you can actually make a living on that
yeah.
in college basketball. I'm still a big believer in that you have to have a tremendous amount of talent out of high school on your roster, but it's not the end-all be-all anymore, and Calipari found that out at Kentucky. And we found that out this past season with Aiden Holloway when he was supposed to be the man.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I kind of like it in basketball when you get to see. I would love year in, year out for it to be like it used to be, where your roster played and stayed together for 2 to 3 years almost all the time, even 4 years. I mean, that kind of continuity when you've got players that can that know how to play the game, know how to play with one another, that's how you get, in the past, deep, deep in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But nowadays, just as long as you're getting the guys that are all like-minded, why not, you know, worry more about the portal in basketball, and I can't believe I'm saying this, than high school recruiting?
Mm.
Because a lot of these players are proven commodities. And unlike in football, when someone comes from North Texas – or some smaller school, you kind of got to take a lot of their numbers with a grain of salt. But in basketball, those type teams are playing against big-time opponents all the time in the first third of the season before conference play and in postseason. And you can see somebody like J.P. Pegues and what he did in postseason. I mean, kid can play.
He's a player, and he's proven it. I think that's a really good point. That's a really, really good point about who these basketball teams are playing, who they're scheduling, who they're getting in postseason play. And it goes back to what I always talk about, too. One player is so much more impactful in basketball than it is in football because of the numbers, right? Take out, of course, a quarterback in football, but any random position in football compared to any random position in basketball – it takes one player to change a team in basketball. It takes a group of players to change a team in football because there's so many different guys. And so that's what you're talking about. It's okay to go get a J.P. Pegues because he instantly makes you better compared to one transfer portal linebacker. Like, yeah, he makes you better, but not as much as a singular basketball player does.
I will say one guy, if you have a solid roster in football, can make the difference between you winning a championship or not. And Auburn's proven this twice. 2010, when they added Cam Newton as a JUCO transfer. You know, a lot of the comments that came out a couple of weeks ago when that story broke back out about how he, you know, basically finally said, told a lot of the backstory of the investigation into him at Auburn and all the just complete BS that he and his family had to go through mm-hmm. from the mudslingers out there. You know, he said it. He said eventually he decided he wanted to come to Auburn because he felt like that roster around him that would be at Auburn was going to be better than that roster that would be around him at Mississippi State. Auburn had a solid roster. Gene Chizik and the team had done a pretty good job turning the recruiting failures late in Tuberville's career. Basically, i.e. when Nick Saban came in and planted an Alabama flag in the state of Alabama, said it was his for 2 years straight.
Mm-hmm.
So they had started building some talent and had some key personnel around him, and they brought that one guy in who was just completely dynamic. I mean, one of the best college football player seasons I've ever seen in my life, fact. And they did turn around and did the same thing in 2013 with Nick Marshall. You got to have guys, you know, you got to have competent players and competent talent in football, but you're right. Nine times out of ten, it's the one or two players in basketball that can make the bigger difference on a roster than in football.
Which is what Auburn's trying to do with these two transfer portal guys. You're talking about a big man, or I guess a four, and then you're also talking about a point guard as well. Auburn swung and missed twice last week. It's time to get back into the hit column and get some singles and get some doubles here this week as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure, like you said, looking over these two guys, that they're not more impressive than the guys that Auburn missed on last week.
I'm with you. I mean, I think they're every bit of equal, if not better. And I'm not saying that, oh, we didn't get those guys, but these are better. No, I really do think that these guys are very comparable to what Auburn was going after last week. And it still hurts to not get those guys, but I think Auburn could benefit from adding these two, and we'll see if they can do it and getting visits lined up and everything else. And so hopefully those things go well. And hopefully Auburn is able to land those portal players and kind of fill out the rest of this roster before basketball season gets going in October and November. We'll take our first break here in hour number two. Come back. Want to get to a conversation a caller brought up earlier today before we get to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. That's all coming up here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
An interesting topic that a listener and caller brought up earlier, John in Auburn, asked us a question, Uncle Tebow, and I told him we were going to get back to it, and here we are. He brought up a point about college football, particularly in the SEC. We're going to talk about this for the next 7 minutes or so before we get to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network to get all the latest updates around Auburn athletics. He asked us about the SEC and how it's going to this new format where you're adding Texas and Oklahoma, and you no longer have divisions, right? You know, the West doesn't exist. The East is gone. And he was asking and kind of making some predictions himself and wanted to know what we had to say. Which teams, and I think it can go both ways, which teams are going to benefit the most and which teams are going to hurt the most from the schedules changing up a little bit and them just looking different, not being held down to playing the same six teams every single year and only having one or two crossover games to the other side. Which teams are beneficiaries and which ones are going to feel the pain?
I just think that I don't know if it's necessarily because of the elimination of the divisions. I don't think there's any clear advantage for LSU in that situation. Like maybe on Auburn or Ole Miss get that benefit. But I'll say this, I think LSU's just primed to pop. Brian Kelly is a good football coach. They have recruited very well long since before he was there. He's continuing that. They are in everybody's top 10 every single year since he's been at LSU in recruiting. And
they have secretly and quietly loaded that roster.
They're loaded. And
nobody's talking about it.
Tremendous amount of talent in Louisiana. For years, Nick Saban has gone down there and cherry-picked a lot of talent away from LSU. I don't think that's going to continue with Kalen DeBoer. I'm sorry, folks. I'm sorry, Alabama people out there listening. I'm sure that Alabama's going to continue to get its fair share of very good players, but they're not going to be able to roll down into Louisiana and South Louisiana like Nick Saban did because he had so many connections while he was the coach at LSU. So they put up a wall around that state, especially the New Orleans area, for high school recruiting, and they start just hammering that and getting the majority of those players, again, like Nick Saban did early in his career while he was at LSU, you better watch out for that program.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. They are a team that is going to be good regardless, but now that their schedule gets a little bit easier, yeah, they're absolutely going to be on the benefiting side of that. Look at what LSU's football schedule is this year, okay?
Right.
They open up with USC to start on that Sunday night, which, you know, they've expanded the opening weekend of college football for about a week now. They have the Sunday night game against USC, which is going to be a lot of fun, I think. But then you play Nichols at South Carolina. That's an interesting start for them at South Carolina. Home for UCLA in the end of September, okay? Then you get South Alabama. September's a weird month for them. That's a weird month. But look at their SEC games after that. Home for Ole Miss, at Arkansas, at A&M, home for Bama, at Florida. But they get Vanderbilt on the schedule. They get Oklahoma on the schedule. And South Carolina's on that schedule, right? Early in the year. It is on the road. But this schedule may not be the best representative or the best, I guess,
it's
backup.
It's not that bad a schedule.
It's not bad. It's not as good as it could be, but it's not bad. And I think over the years with LSU playing the likes of, yeah, Vanderbilt and South Carolina and Kentucky and Missouri, getting to play those teams every year, yeah, those are, should be, and this is the argument I had the other day with Auburn, those should be wins year in and year out for LSU. That's the expectation. Sure. LSU should always beat Missouri. They should always beat Kentucky. They should always beat the lower tier programs of the conference. Same way with Auburn, which is why I think Auburn's going to be a huge, huge benefiter of this new schedule. Because, yeah, you're still going to play Georgia, Alabama every year, but look at the schedule this year. You get Vanderbilt this year. You get the Kentuckys and the Missouris of the world. Those are supposed to be wins compared to the 50-50 coin flips of what has been Ole Miss and Mississippi State in the past.
Well, I mean, I'm old school enough Auburn fan to believe that Auburn should kick the you-know-what out of Ole Miss and Mississippi State
and
football, but that has not been the case over the last 10 years anytime they line up. Going through this LSU schedule very quickly, I know they've got two big names from out in California, now big Big Ten conference participants, in opening with USC. I don't know enough about USC just yet. I have not began my preseason college football analysis and research, but I would take LSU in that game right now. I would easily take them over Nichols. I'll take them over at South Carolina. They're going to kill South Carolina. I'll take them over UCLA, over South Alabama. They're 5-0, rolling back home. Going to be a night game. You know it. Going to be a wild atmosphere hosting Ole Miss, who's a dangerous football team. But I'll take LSU there. I'll take them against Arkansas. I'll take them against A&M, even though it's at A&M. And I'll give them the benefit of the doubt hosting Alabama in Tiger Stadium.
Kalen DeBoer's first trip to Baton Rouge.
You know, I think that Florida's going to be an absolute train wreck by November 16th when LSU
yeah,
goes
that
to
is
Gainesville.
Be bad.
Although they do struggle playing over in Gainesville.
Talk about a team that's going to struggle with the new schedule.
It's
Florida if they
absolutely
don't get it together.
They're in big trouble down there. They may not even have a head coach by the time LSU comes to town in Gainesville on November 16th. Then they get this break against Vanderbilt, and their natural rival at the end of the season is Oklahoma at home. They will have, in my opinion, no more than one loss by the time they go to the SEC championship.
Wow.
I mean, remember that roster is fantastic. I know they lose Jaden Daniels. That defense is going to get better. If they'd had any inkling of defense last year, they'd have made the college football playoffs.
Yeah, they were up there. And you got to remember, it's the top two teams that make it to Atlanta. There are no more divisions. God, it's going to be fun. That's a conversation we get to have even more throughout the rest of the summer. But we'll take a break from that because Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us after this, getting you updated on everything around Auburn athletics. That's coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goetz. Alongside me is Uncle T-Bone. And joining us on the phone lines, as he does every Monday afternoon, it is Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. Hillman, happy Monday. Hope all is well over there at the Sports Network.
Hey, it's going well right now, Jacob. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Well, there's a lot to get to, and so I want to go ahead and jump into it. We have not a baseball series win to talk about, but we do have a baseball game win to talk about. Auburn, after dropping the first two against Ole Miss this weekend, they come back, and we talked about it at the beginning of the show today. Lots of fight, lots of heart, and it meant a lot for Auburn to get that win yesterday against Ole Miss in the Sunday game.
Yeah, it was an interesting weekend against Ole Miss, and you're still fighting for that spot in Hoover at the end of this season, and it's gonna take a lot. Auburn's gonna have to win out, and I think get some help from Ole Miss or LSU losing out. But you know, it doesn't matter to this team. They want to keep fighting and keep playing for this Auburn fan base as well as Coach Thompson and his coaching staff. You saw the crowd there on Saturday night. It was a sellout, and it looked every part of it. Coach Thompson talked about it on Sunday's pregame report with Andy Burcham before the game got started. And you know, it really does. He's talked about how encouraging it is when you see that and that the crowds continue to come in. And maybe not at the record-setting pace that we saw earlier this season or earlier last month or even last year, but they're still showing up, and that's what's so important, especially as the renovations move along with Plains and Park. But overall, I thought this team continued to show fight Friday through Sunday. Obviously, Friday, it's a four-run loss, but you had a tying run at the plate in the ninth inning, and then you led most of the game Saturday, couldn't hold on, and then Sunday you win an absolute wild game, which with the way things have gone, I think it was just good for them to finally find a way to win like they did last Sunday against LSU. So the positives are starting to build up for this team, fortunately, and it could be too little too late, but that's not stopping this team from fighting.
Well, what was it yesterday? I know you were a part of it there. You were with the guys there in the booth at the Auburn Sports Network yesterday afternoon. And what was it that was the difference where Auburn got punched in the mouth early, as has happened numerous times this year? They go down 5-0, and they didn't get it all back in one inning, Hillman. They fought back. It took four innings to do it, went down again, came back, and then ultimately walked it off. What was the difference yesterday afternoon that just hasn't been there every single game this year?
The easy thing to point to is Chase Alsup and his performance. 4 2/3 innings, he struck out 9. Everything was working for him. And I thought the bullpen overall throughout the weekend had its bright moments. There were also some not-so-bright moments as well with walking hitters late in ball games and that giving Ole Miss the lead late. But I thought that there was some improvement this weekend, especially with Chase Alsup. After not pitching against LSU, he came in and had an incredible performance, a career high in strikeouts, or at least tying his career high. And it just really gave this team a lot of momentum and really the push to pull through and get that win in the ninth inning, obviously. Ole Miss took the lead back in the top of the ninth inning, but I think Manners had the triple in the bottom of the ninth to spark the rally and get the win. So, yeah, I just think the bullpen showed some life, and that's what was so important for this team. Kind of like last week at LSU again, kind of referencing, because these two weekends I thought mirrored each other in a way, where Auburn was so close to most of those ball games and finally got the win in game 3. Parker Carlson was the star in the Sunday win against LSU, and it was Chase Alsup yesterday.
Jacob, Tigers travel up to Atlanta tomorrow, 7 o'clock pitch, first pitch against our good friends and old rivals, the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. They'll take it to Missouri, 2 series left in the season against Missouri and then at home against Alabama. What's the schedule this weekend against Missouri? Is that a Thursday night, Friday, Saturday type situation?
No, this will be a Friday through Sunday series. It'll be the last one of the year, Friday through Sunday, because obviously – the last series of the year when Auburn faces Alabama and everyone else in the conference will be Thursday through Saturday, so that the top 12 teams can get on the way to Hoover. Hopefully Auburn's a part of that. They're going to have to obviously sweep these last two series. It's going to be a tall task, but these guys are showing the fight. So, yeah, the schedule this weekend, it'll be a bit of a short week after Missouri going in to Alabama.
Yeah, Tigers shelled Georgia Tech 12-8 at home. Who's going to throw tomorrow?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that decision. I think it was Christian Herberholz a few weeks ago. I can't recall, and I'll see if I can pull it up, who pitched against Georgia Tech in that first matchup. But, yeah, I think Auburn's kind of gone back and forth with some of these the midweek starters and overall been pretty successful in that way. And I think we'll see if they're trying to ramp somebody back up or if they go back to what worked. It was Joseph Gonzalez. Back in that first matchup against Georgia Tech, Christian Herberholz got some innings as well in that game. So I think it'll be interesting to see who they go back to. Herberholz might be a good candidate, but yet 2 midweeks left, both on the road, one at Georgia Tech and then obviously at Samford next Tuesday.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joining us on the phone lines, talking all things Auburn athletics as we flip over to softball. It's going to be a busy week at James B. Moore Field. We'll get to that in just a second. This Auburn team finishing up the regular season at 9-15 in conference play. They earned themselves the 10 seed in the SEC tournament in the standings, and so they'll be playing in their home ballpark, but they ended the regular season with a series win over Alabama. Back-to-back years, first time since 2017. Man, the Tigers are flying high going into their home games, I guess, against the SEC in the SEC tournament.
Yeah, no, it was a really impressive series win over Alabama this weekend. And interesting, though, this is the first season in Alabama softball history that they've had a losing record in SEC play and to make that happen. So. But yeah, I mean that's an incredible resume for the in-state rivals. But no, the series win was really impressive. Obviously, a lot of pitchers duels over the weekend. Great showings from Annabelle Weidra on Sunday to get the series win. Shelby Lowe in the loss on Friday in that extra innings affair, and from Maddie Pinta in relief of that as well as a start on Thursday. And I think that was just the case all weekend. It was consistent pitching, and it's kind of wild. Alabama didn't score a run before the seventh inning all weekend long. They got three runs in the seventh, in the top of the seventh inning, before Auburn held on 4-3 on Thursday in game one. They got the one or the two runs on Friday in the 11th inning. And then obviously Annabelle Weiser shuts out Alabama to win the series. So just a really strong weekend where Auburn came in and got hits when it mattered and really came through. Amelia Leck was just timely hitting home runs early in both wins. This Alabama team coming into the weekend, the pitching staff was first in the SEC in extra base hits allowed. And it's something that I thought played into Auburn's favor a little bit because the way it likes to play small ball, but it found the extra base hits when it needed to. Axel Milanowski had a big double in game one as well as game three. So I was very pleased with the way the offense clicked in a timely manner against Alabama. And obviously, like I said, the pitching was just as stellar as you would expect.
And in my opinion, it was nice to see Auburn bounce back and get the win on Saturday after the marathon they went through on Friday that they came on the wrong end of, right? 11 innings. And for those that don't know, softball, college softball is 7 innings. And so they played 4 extra innings and then you lose 2-0. And I think it's safe to say that the offensive side has been the weaker side for this Auburn softball team. But they bounce back on Saturday 3-0 and they rely on the pitching that has been so good and they get that series win over Alabama. They now turn to the SEC tournament, which we mentioned is being held at James B. Moore Field here in Auburn. Before we talk about Auburn's matchup against Georgia, what do people need to know that are interested in going or listening or anything? I mean, tell us everything people need to know about the softball tournament this week.
Yeah. Obviously, the SEC softball tournament is being hosted right here in Auburn at James B. Moore Field. So that's a big deal. We talked about it a little bit last week where it doesn't come around very often because just about every single SEC team gets to host. So it just goes around and comes around. And it's going to be a while until that happens again. If they don't switch to a permanent location, that's very possible that they do that. But we'll have to see what direction it goes into. But point being is, the single-session tickets are on sale. And the quantities are limited, so make sure you head on over to aubtix.com, and there are SEC softball tournament tickets available for all sessions, including Auburn's on Wednesday. They play Georgia at 4:00 Central at James B. Moore Field. So maybe duck out of work a little bit early and head on over to the ballpark. So I see the Tigers take on the Bulldogs, a rivalry matchup. These two teams they did not face off this year in the regular season, so it'll be the first time they face each other this year.
Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. So moving over to basketball real quick, because Tigers still have a couple of spots left on the roster to fill. Went 0-2 last week, it seems like, on a couple of key players that the Tigers, Bruce Pearl and staff, had circled to possibly be transfer portal guys. But a couple of new names have popped up today, one from Samford and one from University of Texas, San Antonio. What can you tell us about these players?
Yeah, so obviously the two names you're referring to, Achora Chor from Samford and then Jordan Ivy Curry, he's a guard. And both of these guys are looking to add some depth to this team. You've got about 7 guys right now, maybe 8, eight guys right now that you feel real comfortable with on this roster that – you currently have. But again, this is what Coach Pearl and the staff likes to do, is be too deep at every position. And that's what these two guys would accomplish. And Achora, obviously, he was a significant scorer for Samford as a big man this past year. And interestingly enough, plays not necessarily in a similar play style at Samford. Buckyball is something that if you watched Mountain Brook High School basketball over the last decade, pretty familiar with Coach McMillan, but it just really is something that I think he likes that pace of play, and Auburn does push it a little bit. And then Ivy Curry, obviously, being a guard in the Bruce Pearl system, that's a pretty easy sell for him. So they're obviously trying to get those guys to visit here in the coming weeks, and hopefully they can get a commitment and a signature from them.
Jacob Hillman. Let us know everything else going on around Auburn Athletics before we let you get out of here. There's so many of the spring sports that are just finalized or wrapping up as we speak and kind of getting to the tail end of it. Tell everybody what else is happening around Auburn Athletics.
Yeah, first of all, shout out to Auburn men's and women's tennis. Their season came to a close, but another postseason, that's very important. They had to make a trek out west. Both got a postseason win, but fell in the second round. Very impressive seasons for Coach Bobby Reynolds, as well as interim head coach Lester Cook. But Auburn women's tennis also did name Jordan Szabo as its new head coach. He comes from Texas A&M with a very impressive resume, Coach Szabo. He's a two-time ITA National Assistant Coach of the Year, so he's got a great resume there. Also, more postseason action that's taking place on the plains this week is the NCAA Women's Golf Regional that got started today. And number 6, Auburn Women's Golf, currently leads that by 3 strokes over South Carolina, who's the number 2 overall seed in the NCAA championship with a 2-over round today. And also on the individual leaderboard, U.S. Women's Amateur Champion Megan Scofield leads the way at 3-under. She's tied for first. So 2 more days left to get out to Auburn University Club and take in some of that action. So be sure to head on out and support the Lady Tigers. And then, obviously, again, baseball at Georgia Tech tomorrow at 6 o'clock Central. Andy Burch and Brad Law have the call. And then they'll be headed out to Como for that series against Missouri. And then Britt Bowe and J.J. Jackson will have the call for Auburn softball throughout their entire SEC tournament. Starting on Wednesday against Georgia at 4 Central. So track and field also, SEC championships outdoors in Gainesville this weekend starting on Thursday. So like you said, spring sports, postseason action, starting to get ramped up as well as wrapped up. So looking forward to how the Tigers fare in those.
Jacob, are you still with us?
I am, yes.
Yeah, sorry about that. Hey, breaking news real quick while we got you here. Auburn gets just announced transfer portal offensive lineman, Ronan Chambers, who was at Akron last year, the last couple of years, played a lot of football and was going to Tulane. He's picked up and coming to Auburn now. So do you know anything about this kid?
I do not, but I'll tell you what, any offensive lineman that wants to join the Tigers, I welcome them with open arms. So,
yeah, he's done a tremendous job rebuilding that offensive line roster.
They really have. Shout out to Coach Freeze and yeah. Coach Jordan on the offensive line for those recruiting efforts. And it continues to show in the transfer portal.
Absolutely. Hillman, we appreciate you and your time as always. Brother, plug it all. Tell people where they can find all the audio on Auburn Sports Network when the upcoming broadcasts.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU, as well as the Auburn Sports Network at AU Sports Network. Hopefully plenty of post-game interviews with winning coaches and players upcoming in these next few weeks as the semester's ended. Graduation weekend was last weekend, so it's a little quieter on campus, but we still got some Auburn athletics going on.
Awesome, man. Hey, have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Talk to you then. War Eagle.
That's Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. Man, tons of stuff going on right now around Auburn athletics. Spring sports are, as he said, getting into postseason time, which is the best time for all the spring sports in Auburn. We'll take our final break. I want to talk about that offensive lineman and kind of wrap up the show with that. Talk about just what Hugh Freeze has done in the transfer portal and how they have this crazy thing on the offensive line now, Uncle T-Bone. Depth. We'll talk about that as we wrap it up here on the Monday edition of On the Line after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line. We appreciate you all being with us, whether it's one segment, 1 hour, all show long, does not matter. We appreciate you being with us. It's been a great show, man. Mondays are a lot of fun. You get to recap everything from the weekend and kind of get the week started off right. And Uncle T-Bone, it's been another good one once again.
Yeah, I want to circle back real quick to something that John, one of our best callers, brought to the table discussing Missouri and Kentucky. We went through that Missouri schedule and why I'm not selling them short this season. strictly because how weak their schedule is compared to other teams. And that's got to be one of the easier schedules in the SEC.
I'll admit, I haven't looked at it top to bottom.
Yeah, I know Ole Miss has a very manageable one as well.
Talk about another team that's going to benefit from not being in the West anymore.
They may benefit the most out of anybody. Because Auburn's going to have to keep playing Georgia and Alabama every season.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's not going away.
But they're not.
Correct.
But I'm looking at Kentucky's schedule, who the Tigers will travel to at some point this season. This one is a little bit tougher than Missouri's. They open with Southern Miss, go to South Carolina, host South Carolina, and then host Georgia week three. Then they catch Ohio, then travel to Ole Miss. That's an L. Host Vanderbilt. Florida will be a toss-up. That's at Florida. I think Auburn will be a toss-up. At Tennessee, host Murray State, at Texas, and then their in-state rival Louisville. That's much, much tougher than Missouri's schedule.
Missouri, I got it pulled up right now. Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, Vanderbilt. Yikes. They'll be up. I take that back. I have looked at this schedule
talked about this a little bit earlier.
Yeah, because I think
I went through it quickly though.
Yeah, because I think Missouri and Auburn are both going to be 5-1 going into their matchup together. Because again, Missouri plays Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, Vanderbilt. So you're 4-0, right? You go on the road to A&M, probably lose.
I don't know. I think that they're just. I don't really know what A&M's got.
I don't either.
That's a tough place to play with a rabid crowd. It's very loud in there. You know, a lot of teams struggle in College Station. But Missouri, I just think, is so much better than A&M. This might be a year where they can go out there and take care of business and then come back and then for some reason travel to UMass.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. I don't know why you want to go up there. But
they should, in my opinion, they should be undefeated heading into their game hosting Auburn on October 19th.
And Auburn should very well be 5-1 with those five home games at home in a row, and then you go to Georgia, then your bye week before you go to Missouri. Worst case, you're 4-2, but I think you should be 5-1 if you're Auburn. That's a big game in the SEC because, again, there are no divisions, and so it's the top two teams in the SEC that go to Atlanta. That's a game, believe it or not, Uncle T-Bone, that Auburn-Missouri game is one of the biggest flex games of the year in terms of implications for the SEC title.
Heard on Doug's show earlier that Missouri, according to DraftKings, is a 10-point favorite right now over Auburn. I would take those 10 if I was a betting man right now, see what happens as you get closer to post-time.
Absolutely.
But, you know, Missouri was red hot, fantastic football
That's
team.
Not going to be
but
worse.
I cannot, for some reason, and I might be selling them too short as a program, but I just don't see Missouri being the type team that just stacks up year after year after year being one of the top teams in the SEC. So they better get it now because that could be a swing game for either one of those teams on that schedule.
Yeah, and look, I don't think that line's going to move in the wrong direction for Auburn. There's no shot they roll in there as two touchdown underdogs against Missouri. No way.
No, I mean, ain't no way Auburn's a two touchdown underdog to the Missouri.
No way, Jose. That's what they say.
In any sport.
I love it, man. Football season before you know it. Again, Auburn does pick up an offensive tackle through the transfer portal. And as Jacob Hillman said, it don't matter who it is. Bring them in and put some depth on that offensive line. We'll talk about that some more tomorrow. Lindsey Crosby will join us. Daryl Dapperich will be with us as well. That'll be 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. Until then, stay safe. I'll talk to you later.